Tonight on This Is Vinyl Tap.
Are there any young folk singers or rock groups you recommend for us to hear?
Oh, yeah, there's the Sir Douglas Quintet. I think are probably the best.
In 1948, Columbia Records introduced the 33 and a third RPM long player record. 1 year later, RCA Victor introduced the 45 RPM single. Listeners now had a choice, only the hits or the full album. In the last half of the 60s, the best bands realized the potential of the longer format and began to build a cohesive body of music that must be heard unbroken. The arrival of downloadable music has increased the temptation to stay in the shallow end with the hits. This podcast believes every album tells a story. Tonight, we tell one of those stories. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. This is Vinyl Tap. We're here in the Vinegaroon Saloon in Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world. And I am joined with our producer, Jonathan J.M. Rowe.
Hello, Tapsters.
I'm also here with Power Pop T.
Sporting my Doug Somm Sunvolt t-shirt.
Yes.
Oh, I just noticed that.
Appropriate, yes.
That's a nice color.
Yeah. I might add, it's a wet day in Austin, Texas.
For a change.
Wet and cool.
The drought is over.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
3 days of rain and the drought's over. Okay, yeah. Well, at least in Texas that makes sense, huh?
Anyway,
what are you wearing on your head?
Oh, you noticed the hat?
Yes.
This light was bothering me. I was hoping this hat wouldn't come up, but I did win it yesterday.
Did you really?
Yeah, I didn't want to talk about it. We have such a busy show.
Was New Belgium the sponsor?
No, it's Voodoo Ranger. That's was the sponsor.
Is
that New Belgium?
That's New Belgium, yeah.
Oh.
Of what?
The contest that I won?
Yes,
first place in?
What was that, Doug? I'm asking. Well,
paper airplane contest at Little Woodrow's.
Congratulations there, Doug.
So you and a bunch of drunks folding paper to see how far it could fly.
Well, let's just say number two was half the distance I got. So
well, there you go.
All of those people who said I was wasting my time in Cub Scout meetings. It paid off.
That's a fine-looking hat.
And I got a t-shirt. I forgot to put on, and also got a gift card.
All right.
Ooh, well, there you go.
What we're doing after the show.
Partake. We're watching nice. University of Texas beat Wyoming.
Some of us are.
Yeah. Tony has to go eat a salad. All right, guys. We're back to our program. We're talking about Doug Somm and his band. This is his first solo effort.
Correct.
After a guy named Jerry Wexler got a hold of him, and this is a great album. And I'll tell you what's interesting about this album is Jonathan J.M. Rowe did not pick it. Tony didn't pick it, and I didn't pick it.
And much to our chagrin.
Yeah, well, we all feel guilty about that. We're all looking at ourselves going, what happened? Every single one of us would have picked this album or another Doug Somm album for sure.
Yeah.
This is a listener's pick. And as you know, each week one of us picks, and on the fourth week, a listener picks. So, but before we go any further into this Texas artist, I have a new feature.
King of new features.
Controversial questions. Dun, dun, dun. These are Doug's controversial questions.
All right.
And I only have two of them, so it's a featurette. I have a question. Is San Antonio the most Texan city of all of Texas?
It's a tie.
I'd say Fort Worth is pretty close.
I'd say it's a tie with Fort Worth.
Yeah. I knew that was coming up.
It might just edge it out because Fort Worth doesn't have quite. If you're going to talk about in light of who we're talking about tonight being maybe the quintessential Texas musician and the genres he sort of can encompass, yeah. Fort Worth doesn't really have kind of a Tejano. I mean, they do, but they not like San not Antonio like San does. Antonio, yeah. But San Antonio had a vibrant punk scene, a blues scene, a rock scene. It's obviously Tejano.
Heavy scene, metal scene.
Heavy metal scene, country heavy scene. And there's probably more songs written about San Antonio than there are about Fort Worth. So maybe the answer is yes.
And one of the advantages San Antonio has is it's where a whole bunch of different parts of Texas meet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The hill country meets South Texas.
Meets the coastal plain.
The ranchers meet the cattle ranchers, meet the goat ranchers. Tejano meets the Germans. One of the things we'll get into when we talk about Doug Somm mixing all these genres. It occurred to me today that he was mixing genres that were thoroughly mixed before they got to him, like Tejano, which is Mexican folk songs mixed with German and Czech
accordions.
I think maybe a better way, because I've been struggling with how to describe what he does, and I think maybe a better way, or at least I'm going to posit this as a better way to say that, is not that he mixes genres, it's just he's significantly comfortable in every one of them. Yeah. Uh-huh. Like, he seems to not have an issue.
Well, he's got a little chameleon tongue that goes, oh, I want that, and he pulls that in.
Yeah, but you know what? I even thought about the chameleon term maybe not being quite right, because it seems like a chameleon isn't as genuine as it needs to be. He seems genuinely comfortable.
Well, I wasn't talking about the chameleon changing colors. I was talking about the tongue.
Ah,
pulling.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I want to do some blues. And then he just picks it up.
Yeah.
So Tony ruined my second question.
Sorry.
That's all right. I'm used to it.
The listeners know I talk too much.
Is Doug Somm the most Texan sounding band of all time? Doug Somm and whoever, the most Texaniest.
You know, it's hard. It's kind of hard for me to. The short answer is yes, because he's got that. But there's so much about Texas music that is infused in his music. And I'm talking, you know, the Norteños type music, the Farfisa organ, that kind of Tejano sound plus. You know, he's got the pedal steel, he's got the twin fiddles. I mean, it's really, he is the most Texan.
I'm going to answer it by saying not necessarily Texas sounding. I think he's the most Texan musician, period.
Yeah.
Well, when I think about it, if someone asked me before I started thinking about this record, I would have said, oh, Bob Wills or something like that. But there are people outside of Texas that sound like Bob Wills.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's people outside of Texas that sound like Willie Nelson.
Yeah.
Not really like Willie Nelson. But
I don't know that Doug Somm could have climbed out of any other place.
not even Texas.
Yeah,
San Antonio.
I absolutely agree with that. I think it's his environment and where he lived, particularly in San Antonio, that infused who he ended up becoming.
There was a place in San Antonio, I don't know if you remember it, Doug. I don't know if it was there when you were there, but there was a place called Taco Land. The place called Taco Land, and you could go in there any night of the week and hear Tejano one night. You would hear just straight old, you know, Ernest Tubb style country music the next night. You would hear a ska band the next night. You would hear punk bands, even, you know.
What about the Oompa bands?
Every now and then, I'm sure at Oktoberfest, you could hear an Oompa band.
There's a giant German and Czech
population
in around. In fact, it's Bear County, which is a German name.
Yeah,
San Antonio's in Bear County, so it's a melting pot.
Yeah, and when I think of San Antonio, that place always comes into my head. When I think about Texas music, I always think of Taco Land.
And I'm not necessarily trying to jump ahead in the story, but I think when we get to the point where we talk about Doug Somm being part of the whole Austin scene in the early 70s and what that represented, this sort of melding of the hippie and the cowboy counterculture type of thing, he's a perfect person for that. But Willie was really a generation older than him, in a lot of ways. Maybe not a generation, but he was definitely older than him. Doug Somm seems like the perfect embodiment of that particular scene. I mean, we talked about Jerry Jeff being maybe that as well, but Jerry Jeff's a New Yorker. So,
the other one that he reminds me of in this, practicing for this podcast, reminded me of Commander Cody so much.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit of the same deal where they're grabbing all kinds of genres and pulling them together. And you think, boy, this is the Texiest music I've ever heard. And you find out they're from Minnesota.
The one thing that Commander Cody didn't have was the sort of Tejano flavor to it.
Yeah.
And Doug Somm, that's such a part of his DNA.
And it's, when you're hearing it, you go, yes, how could anyone not think to put this in here?
Yeah, absolutely.
But if someone did it before him the way he did it, I'm not aware of him. Anyway, so we got this young feller. When we go back and study his music career, we almost go back to when he was in diapers.
Yeah. I mean, he started singing when he was five. His grandfather was in a band. Like, he comes from a musical family. His parents weren't necessarily musical, although they supported him. But his grandfather was in a band called the Somm Boys, which was a polka band, because they emigrated from Germany. I think he's a third generation Texan, maybe second generation Texan. But he's 5 years old when he starts singing, and then he's, how old is he when he picks up the steel?
Six.
6 years old, yeah.
And a prodigy.
That's the word that's bandied about.
Yeah,
that
every article you read, they'll tell us pedal steel prodigy, and then on to mandolin, fiddle, guitar.
What's interesting about the steel thing? I mean, he's using the word prodigy, he was so great in it. He stopped playing it eventually.
Yeah, he didn't play it on this.
And just a brief side, because I think it's a funny story. About 20 years after he played it for the last time, he started hanging out on stage with Alvin Crowe. You guys know this story?
No.
I heard him talking about playing with Alvin Crowe.
Playing steel guitar with Alvin Crowe. And Alvin Crowe says he'd sit on the side of the stage without a mic, he just wanted to play the steel. And he played under the name Wayne Douglas. And people kept coming up to him and saying, "Are you Doug Somm?" And he would say, no, I just look like him. Because he just wanted to be up there playing steel guitar, which I think is a kind of cool story. But yeah, it was he hadn't played in 20 years, but obviously somebody as good as he did, he could slide right into it. Yeah. So,
you can still see Alvin Crowe right over here at Jenny's every now and then.
Yeah. He plays at the Spoke too,
naturally.
And my son actually has a drum set that his Alvin Crowe's.
There you go.
There you are.
It's about J.M.
At six, so he learns to steal at six. He's performs for the first time on a San Antonio radio station, KMAC. And he plays a Sons of the Pioneer song, Teardrops in My Heart, when he's 6 years old. And then he's, I guess his uncle had a band called The Bar, and he would play there. I mean, it's weird to think of a little kid up on stage playing
music.
Well,
didn't his dad own a bar?
I don't think so. I think it was his uncle.
Oh, okay.
But maybe it was his dad. I don't know.
He had access to all that music all the time.
He had access to
it. And then he had access to a stage.
Well, and he, I mean, his parents were, like I said, his parents were really supportive of him. They introduce him or take him over to this guy named J.R. Chatwell's house, a guy named Chat the Cat, or nicknamed Chat the Cat, who was a fiddle player for Dolph Hoffner's band. And if you guys know who he is, he was one of the founding Western swing guys in Texas. Yeah, I think they called him the Bing Crosby of the Plains or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Adolf Hoffner. But I think once World War II broke off, he cut the A off and just went, just disguised it as Dolph. Yeah. Right, go figure.
Yeah, but, I can understand that.
But that guy was a fiddle player for Adolf Hoffner's band, and he essentially was his mentor at a young age. And then it seems like adults were gravitated towards him, I guess, because he was sort of was in that adult world playing all this
stuff. Well, and he was really cute and unshy. What's the word for unshy? I feel like I'm in 1984 where they don't have
confident?
Yeah. You can't use, they try to reduce the language by saying double plus good.
Yeah.
Instead of excellent.
Well, he's actually playing on the Louisiana Hayride with people. Yeah. Playing Steel. Steel was the main thing he was doing
like,
at the time.
Farron Young.
Yeah, Farron Young. Yeah. And then we were just talking about this before we started, that he played it. There was a December show at the Skyline Club, which is this place in Austin. And it's probably most famous for being the last place that Hank Williams played before he died in New Year's Eve of the following year, or New Year's Day of the following year. That show at the Skyline Club, that Hank Williams, that last show, Doug Somm played with him on the stage. And there's this famous picture that I've not been able to see anywhere of him sitting on Hank Williams' knee. And it's funny because he describes it. He says, "I don't remember much about that night other than how bony Hank Williams' knee was." He said he goes, "It felt like I was put on a fence post." That's what he remembers. But again, the picture's hard to find. There is a picture floating around of him shaking hands with him, which is still pretty cool.
That's the only one I saw.
That's the one I was thinking of.
I wish there was a picture of me shaking Hank's hand.
There you go.
I'd be a lot older.
And then at 13, he gets invited to be on the Grand Ole Opry, a regular on the Grand Ole Opry. And his mom tells him, "You know, I don't think that's a good idea. Why don't you finish junior high?" So he doesn't do that. And then at age 11 in 1955, he records his first single. And at the time, he's going by Little Doug, and his band is called The Bandits. And they release this, or he records a single called "A Real American Joe," with the B-side being "Rollin' and Rollin'." And it's rejected by Mercury. He tried to get on Mercury Records. It's rejected by Mercury. So it's released on Sarg Records, which I don't know a whole lot about Sarg Records, but I guess it was an independent Texas label. But I was going to play a little bit of that. I think the important thing to note on that is that Steel we heard was Doug Somm.
Are you serious? I was about to say, that is really good.
I would imagine so.
And the way he's singing, it's like, it's not like a kid singing. It's like an adult with the correct intonation and understanding of what he's singing.
Yeah.
So I want to take a...
That was good.
Yeah.
I want to take a detour. If all that's right. Okay. I know I'm not the host, but Doug, can I take a detour?
You know, I've been such a benevolent and gentle host. I don't think you need to ask.
I want to talk about the neighborhood, Doug.
Okay, I need to form describing what you're about to talk about.
Yeah, he's on the east side of San Antonio.
Well, he grew up on the east side of San Antonio, which is a primarily black neighborhood. And I want to read this quote from him. He says, "Across a plowed field from my house was a place called Eastwood Country Club. On any given night, you had T-Bone Walker, Junior Parker, the Bobby Blue Band Review, Hank Ballard, and James Brown." So that's what he's like across the field from his house. Around by the time he's around 12 or 13, he's got this neighbor named Homer Callahan. And he says he's a redheaded Irishman who loved to fight and listen to Howlin' Wolf. And he'd bring over these great 45s with colorful labels like Excello, Atlantic, and Specialty. And dudes like Lonesome Sundown, Jimmy Reed, and Fats Domino. And so this guy, this neighbor, adult neighbor, is giving this little kid these old records. And even though the Eastwood Country Club is so close to him, he's not old enough to get in, obviously.
Yeah.
So he starts going around and trying to sneak into the place. And he's lurking around so often that the owner of the club eventually just brought him in, gave him a soda, or as we call them in Texas, a Coke, and sat him at the edge of the stage and let him watch the bands because that's what he wanted to do anyway.
Wow.
So here's the end of this quote. He goes, "My mother, bless her soul, couldn't understand the profound effect these records had on her white son, who was growing up fast in a predominantly black section of San Antonio. Bear in mind, these weren't ghettos with crime-filled streets, but for a white boy to be accepted at the Ebony Lounge was like being signed to the New York Yankees."
Wow.
So...
That's excellent.
Yeah. And so he's got this infusion of these blues clubs, and he's a young kid, and he's soaking all that up. So he's got the foundation of country, and then he's got these blues stuff. Then he starts going over to the west side, and he starts going to these Latino clubs, and he starts making friends with those guys and those bands, and they've got these big horn sections. He's like, holy cow, what's going on there? And You know, when I was doing research, what seemed to me, and this is not, I'm not saying anything spectacular here, but Doug Somm seemed like he was just drawn to anything that had soul to it. Like, that's what he wanted. He didn't care what kind of music it was.
Authentic.
As long as it was authentic.
Yeah.
And so he ends up performing at some of these clubs after a while. He's on stage with these bands. And so he's going to high school during the day, and he's performing at nighttime. And around 53, he meets somebody who's going to play a pretty integral part in his life.
Augie Myers.
At the grocery store.
At Augie Myers' parents' grocery store.
Did you hear about the baseball cards?
Yeah. Tell the story.
So they met because Augie was taking, and I don't know how you describe the Doug Somm sound without Augie Myers.
Yeah.
It would be nearly impossible. Right. And Augie's, it's very distinct. Mm-hmm. You immediately recognize it. Anyway, he's a very important part of this story. His family had a grocery store, and he was carrying out the groceries to Doug Somm's car. And he goes, "Oh, you got a guitar." And they started talking about music. And eventually they became friends. And one day Doug Somm takes his baseball collection over, and they go to the back and they start opening the boxes of new baseball cards, and they open them up and look through the cards to find the ones that Doug Somm still needs to fill out his. And his mom comes back and says, "Dad, what are y'all doing? You shouldn't be doing." And he goes, "We're not touching the gum." And she goes, "Okay, I guess that's fine."
So they put them back on the shelf?
No, they put them back and they'd restick them.
And put them back on the shelf and after he'd take the cards out.
Well, no. He would he would take the ones he needed give. And,
I see.
I mean, he would put his cards that he didn't need as duplicates.
That's hilarious.
And that's the beginning of their friendship.
That's really funny.
I wish I could turn that into an analogy of how the music turned out to be. But
and the interesting thing
they
about
just take a little from each packet of music around them.
And they threw out the
dogs.
The interesting thing about Augie Myers is he had polio as a kid.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
He actually, one of his legs was shorter than the other one as a result of that.
And he was trying to get Doug to teach him a guitar, and his hand was still messed up.
But he ends up learning the accordion, the piano, and of course, you know, because he's responsible for that, lovely
Marfisia organ.
Yeah. And rhythm guitar, and he ends up, Augie's in a band called Andy Esba and the Goldens. And around that same time, Doug is playing in a succession. I mean, he's like in five different bands. He's in the Knights, the Marques, the Del Kings, the Pharaohs, and the Doug Somm Big Band. I guess whenever he could get in, depending on the clubs he was playing at, he would do.
How many names did he use up?
I don't know, but there's a funny story. Did you hear the story about him playing at a show in high school?
No. I didn't hear that one. Uh-uh.
So his band's playing in high school, and you know, you take all these with a grain of salt, but it's a great story anyway.
Yeah,
he's playing in high school, and the principal tells him, you know, you keep it clean, boys. So he goes up there and he starts gyrating like Elvis, and the principal immediately shuts things down, and there's a damn near riot on his hand. Cut the show off, and the kids were so enamored by what they saw. Evidently, they followed him home so that the band could keep playing at the Somm home. Wow. And all the kids sat around and watched him.
That's
keep
funny.
Playing,
that's so. Did you see? You know, speaking of his dancing, did you see him on David Letterman?
Yeah,
it is so good.
Yeah,
it's not just it's the Texas Tornadoes are on David Letterman, and all the musicians and the David Letterman's normal band are in awe. And Somm comes up there without any instruments, and he starts doing the funkiest. It reminded me of Bob Wills, how he looks like a cartoon character.
That's hilarious.
It was so good.
I'll have to check that out. It's interesting because I think without him knowing it, because this actually wasn't a term until much later, he's instrumental in creating this thing that's now known as the West Side Sound, the San Antonio West Side Sound. And according to what I read, it wasn't called that until 1983, when Doug Somm actually put a song on one of his albums called The West Side Sound. So that's when they got that name. But it was essentially this kind of stew of horns, Tejano music, country, blues, just what he was doing, essentially, you know?
And that leads me to a question.
Okay.
And I've been thinking about this all week, and this is a question, ladies and gentlemen, that I cannot answer. You will very seldom hear me admit that. I'm trying to separate the music of the West Side Sound from Los Lobos and the L.A. deal. What separates them?
Twin Fiddles and Pedal Steel.
Was that in the West Side Sound?
I'd say it's in the West Side Sound.
Because I'm thinking that the West Side Sound is just the Tejano Sound.
I don't know. That's a good question.
Is it more German and Czech than
probably?
I think that Farfisa organ and all that kind of stuff is that you don't find that in East LA.
I mean, there is a. I think the polka aspect of it probably has something to do with it.
Yeah.
You know, I think that that's the one sort of missing ingredient. They're close, I would think.
Oh yeah.
But that aspect.
And I'm sure they're borrowing from each other all the time.
Yeah.
But that came to my mind when listening to this and thinking about a past episode.
Yeah.
Which reminds me of something.
We've all been here before.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. This is the homemade version of Connections. This is when we try to connect this episode with previous episodes. And I'm going to go to Power Pop Tea to begin with. Power Pop Tea, do you have a connection?
I have lots of connections, but I'll put this one out first because I think it's a funny one. Harry Nilsson.
Well, I don't have an idea on that.
I have no idea.
It's possibly a tenuous connection, but it's one I want.
Those are more fun usually.
So Doug Somm in 1969, that Sir Douglas Quintet appeared on Playboy After Dark.
Which I saw that.
Harry Nilsson also.
Oh, that's good. That's right.
But I want to tell a little bit of a story about that. Hefner, if you saw it, Hefner was kind of a jerk to him. He said something like,
well, he's real dismissive.
You were in the top 40 and then you sort of went away.
Yeah, that's how he opened up the interview.
Yeah, he's just a big jerk.
But Doug Somm was a complete gentleman and didn't let it get to him.
Here's the funny part of that. So,
and then he got up there and tore one up.
He did. So, you guys know Atwood Allen?
No, I don't.
Atwood Allen was a guy who sang, he actually wrote one of the songs on the album we're talking about.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he wrote It's Gonna Be Easy. But
great song.
He sang a lot with the Sir Douglas Quintet. He sang harmony with Doug Somm a lot. He had kind of a high voice. Anyway, he's on that Playboy After Dark. But the thing about it is he was a large, burly guy who had a penchant for wearing overalls. So the producers of the show said, we don't want that guy on camera. He doesn't fit the appearance of the sophisticated audience we're going for.
Of people to get naked for money.
Exactly. So Somm insisted he be part of the production. But what he had to do is he had to stand behind a curtain so he could sing harmony vocals on the two songs they performed. Because they did Mendocino and She's About a Mover. And the Playboy producers wouldn't let him on the camera. So he's behind the curtain in that performance when they're performing.
Wow.
They found somebody they wanted to cover up at the Playboy Mansion.
There you go. So anyway, that long-winded connection there.
Huh.
Jonathan J.M. Rowe, you have a connection for us?
Yeah. Fathead Newman.
It's a good one.
He played with Ray Charles. I believe he even played on the Modern Sounds. He was this, like the band
director.
Leader.
For the Modern Sounds of Country and Western Music that we did.
And was that album, was that an Atlantic album?
I believe it was.
So that brings us to a connection with Jerry Wexler.
Well, there's lots of connections with Jerry Wexler.
Yeah, so he's muy connected. Wexler's the one that made this album come about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, ladies and gentlemen, that's the producer that got Aretha Franklin away from Columbia Records and said, how about you quit sounding like a little teeny bopper Motown singer and why don't you let your voice do what it was made for?
Yeah. Well, and there's guys on this album that played on the Aretha album we talked about.
Yeah.
Willie Bridges, I think, played saxophone and Arif Mardin, who plays electric piano on this album tonight, was the engineer for that I Never Loved a Man the Way I Love You. So,
and wasn't he a co-founder of Atlantic? Or he had something. He and Jerry Wexler work a lot together.
Both of them are on a whole bunch of the same records. So they were just engineer and producer over and over again.
I've got another odd connection.
All right.
Big Star.
Wow. Not going to get this one.
I'm not going to get this one either.
Again, tenuous, but Wayne Jackson, who was a member of the Memphis Horns, he's on this album. He plays on the LP Soul Deep, which is a Box Tops album, which had Alex Chilton on it, and Alex Chilton, of course, is with Big Star.
That is a stretch. I love that song, though.
I just wanted to talk about
Jonathan Jamroll, do you have one that doesn't require five jumps like that?
Yeah. Bob Dylan.
Oh, that a boy.
That's a pretty solid.
Yeah. I believe he's on the album with the beep eating grin.
Yeah, Bob Dylan and kind of by extension, Augie Myers, because Augie Myers is part of Bob Dylan's band now.
Is that right?
Yeah. I did not know that. Yeah.
It's the old fart traveling show. Yeah.
Before the pandemic, I saw Augie and Roy Head play in San Marcos together. It was very good.
Huh. Okay, I've got the weirdest connection of all.
Okay.
All right. Our first podcast.
Our first one? Which one? The girlfriend that was not done or the...
No. The first one we posted.
Jerry Jeff. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know.
And Doug Somm.
Okay.
We posted that on November 6th.
Really?
And that's Doug Somm's birthday.
Is that right?
Wow.
So that's the first time we've connected ourselves with a major artist.
And I believe that David Bromberg, who is on this album because of Dylan, also played with Jerry Jeff and he played with Willie. Hmm. Willie Nelson's a connection.
Yep.
Because there's a Willie Nelson song on this album, Me and Paul.
And who knows how many times those guys played together.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I've got one more.
Oh, okay, got a good one.
This is another sort of jump through hoops, but it's a funny one. The Band and Elton John. I'll just throw them both in the same time.
All right, I know Elton John.
What's that?
Wasn't Elton John in the studio when they were recording this?
He was. So was Rick Danko and Garth Hudson.
Is that right?
None of them play on the album, but the three of them at one point or another were
That's
in
so
the studio.
Weird. Just That's think weird, you're yeah. walking through the hallway and all these guys are just hanging out.
Well, the funny thing about Elton John is the guys who didn't know who he was. There were several guys in the studio who didn't know who he was.
Really?
Saw this weird guy, and he was wearing platform shoes with goldfish swimming around in them. And they're like, is that what it takes to make it in the music business these days? Are we going to all start walking around with goldfish in our shoes?
Elton John was wearing that?
Yeah. Oh.
We should get some. You get attention from the ladies. Oh, I feel sorry for the fish. You love
fish. Anyway.
All right. That was a good one.
That was.
So where were we with his life?
He's just met Augie Myers, and they're
about to take off.
Yeah.
Well, before they take off,
they're in separate bands.
In separate bands, and Doug Somm actually is signed to this, sort of a local regional label called Renner Records, and he's releasing singles. And he does one's called Crazy Daisy. That was the first one in 59. Then he does Why, which is actually a local hit. So that is recorded by Doug Somm and the Marques.
I really like that.
That's 1960. And then he has another local hit with Crazy, Crazy Feeling and in 61. And then also in 61, Just a Moment. And then Lucky Me in 63 followed. He gets dropped by the label. And so he's like, what do I do now? And he goes and seeks out a gentleman by the name of Huey P. Mew. You guys know who that is?
I know.
Yeah. Sugar Hill Records.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Back then? Mm-hmm. I didn't know Sugar Hill went back so late.
Yeah, but... Yeah.
Early.
Yeah, so he's the owner of Sugar Hill Recording Studios, and he's got some success with some local Houston area artists, Dale and Grace and Barbara Lynn. He tells Somm he's not interested. He doesn't want anything to do with it. Well, that rejection doesn't last very long, because all of a sudden, Mr. Mew finds himself on the outs in terms of the charts because Beatlemania is hit. And he's like, I don't know what to do about this. So there's a story that who knows how true it is. But according to Mr. Mew himself, he's trying to find out the reason why the Beatles are so hot. So he rents three rooms at the Wayfarer Hotel in San Antonio. gets a case of Thunderbird wine and as many Beatles albums as he can find, and he starts listening to them, trying to figure out what the secret is. And according to him, he finds out that the Beatles songs shared a common ground with traditional two-step Cajun music. And so he says, he calls up Psalm and says, I need you to write a song that sounds like this, in this style. He goes, just do it like this two-step Cajun music, but do it in kind of this Beatles-esque form. You do it. And supposedly, according to Huey Mew, that's how he got Doug Somm and the Sir Douglas Quintet going. Augie Myers says what got Mew interested in them is they were on a bill with in San Antonio in their two separate bands opening for the Dave Clark Five.
Right, that's what I've heard.
And he saw that and said, "Oh, I want to get these guys going and get onto this whole Beatlemania thing."
Well, I would like to stop for 5 hours and try to figure out Cajun two-step music and the Beatles and the connection. Yeah. I would love to figure out what he heard that put those two together.
I have no idea. But what's interesting about the song that they produce, She's About a Mover, although the original...
She's a Body Mover.
The original tune was She's a Body Mover.
That makes a lot more sense.
It does. Was based on She's a Woman, the Beatles song She's a Woman.
Combined with something else that I can't remember. But they, what did they do to make them sound more British?
Well, they named him the Sir Douglas Quintet and he said, you got to grow your hair long. And let me tell you something. Those hairdos that the Sir Douglas Quintet have are pretty horrible. Even for the time, they're pretty horrible.
Well, it's not just that they're long.
It looks like David Crosby when he's with the Birds.
And a lot of them don't have the right face for that kind of hairdo. No.
Well, and the funny thing is the whole trying to keep the whole masquerade of them being British is they would photograph them in silhouette, like they would let them see, because there's two
Hispanic
guys in the band, and so that facade lasts until they're on a show with I guess Hullabaloo with Trini Lopez, and he raps them out and says, you guys are from Texas. And there's this great clip where Doug Somm's got this grin, this blank-eating grin, to quote you, Doug, on his face. And then he leans in and says something like, y'all come back, or something like that. But, you know, they hit it big. That song, She's About a Mover, is a top 20 single in the U.S. and the U.K. They tour with the Beach Boys. They open for the Beatles. They play with the Stones. They play with, who else do they play with?
James Brown.
Yeah, James Brown. I mean, it's just crazy. Yeah. I mean, it was just this monster hit. And they're doing this. They do like the Dick Clark American Bandstand. They do all these shows. And they're a big deal.
Do we want to hear a live from Austin version of that song?
Sure.
This is from a slightly older gentleman. That's the Augie we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen. All right, that's about 30 years after what we're talking about.
It's still great.
It is. And that, the gosh, nobody makes me think of Austin. I see that. I think Soap Creek Saloon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And all those bills down on the drag in Austin. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Memory lane.
Now, that Farfisa organ, that was kind of new at the time. They had been played before, but not in that kind of... that style. And you know, you see it on, you can hear, and Hispanic bands with Hispanics in it seem to use that. What
Hispanic bands with Hispanics in it, I guess that works.
You know, those guys, not the Hispanic bands with white guys in it.
bands with Hispanic people in them use that farfisa.
Why don't you say Tejano or something?
Because question mark and the Mysterians, they use that a lot too. And if you hear that,
Joe King Carrasco,
there's a white guy.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Augie says what attracted him to that organ was not the sound.
What was it?
How cool it looked with the offset white.
Oh, really?
He wanted that. He said the keyboard looked cool. It was a cool looking keyboard.
You never know what's going to control your destiny.
Yeah.
No. Well, something that has a big impact on the album we're talking about happens around 1965, maybe a little bit before then, but I think it's around 65. The Sir Douglas Quintet is in England. Doug meets somebody.
Is this the Boo Tour?
Maybe the Boo Tour. He meets Bob Dylan. And they take an instant liking to each other. It's funny, when I was trying to figure out what the connection was, most people speculate that they were both attracted to authentic people. I don't know if Dylan, I would use that term to describe Dylan, but I get it.
Or marijuana.
Probably, it was probably more that.
Yeah.
The marijuana thing. But
And ladies and gentlemen, we in no way endorse that.
That's right.
Yeah, there's that great story about when the Dead was playing in Austin, and Doug Somm was excited about it, and he shows up and he realizes he hears that of all people, Jerry Garcia is out of drugs, so he's like, "I got to find the guy some pot. We can't have that," you know. Anyway, that's a side note.
Yeah.
We at the beginning of the episode we played that clip of Dylan when he's asked, "Is that a New York City conference?"
That looked like the same press conference where he was such a jerk.
Song and dance man.
Yeah, it was that same. Where was that?
That's New York.
Yeah. So he's asked if he knows any up and coming folk bands, and he goes, and that's when he says, "I'm glad you asked that question."
He said folk or rock bands.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question, and he throws out the Sir Douglas Quintet. What does he say? They're pretty good, or they're anyway. So it's a fortuitous meeting because Dylan ends up being a big part of the album we're talking about tonight.
Yeah.
But then something else sort of fortuitous happens. That same year in December, they get busted in Corpus Christi,
of all places, yeah.
For possession of marijuana. And the weird thing about that is they get probation. They get released on, I think Doug Somm gets released on $1,500 bond, which is equivalent to about 14 grand today's money. And they're put on probation and with supervision for 5 years. And this is in March of 66. But for some reason, Augie Myers is told he can't leave the state. He's stuck in the state. Doug Somm gets permission from his probation officer to leave, and he ends up going to California. He leaves the state. He's
going to Frisco to get away from the drugs.
That's right.
Ashbury.
Yeah, he goes to Haight-Ashbury. And he reforms the Sir Douglas Quintet without Augie Myers. And they're playing around. They play the Fillmore, the Avalon. He meets Jerry Garcia. They start playing with the Dead and Big Brother and Holding Company. And they ended up getting signed to Mercury Records and its subsidiary labels. And in December of 68, he's on the cover of Rolling Stone. Because evidently there's a lot of Texas expats in that area. So Rolling Stone does a cover story about all these Texas musicians.
Like Steve Miller.
In Northern California. Yeah. And he's the cover boy.
Janis Joplin.
And the funny thing about that is he ends up grabbing his son and putting his son on his lap for the cover story to sort of recreate the picture
of Hank.
I don't know if his son said it was like sitting on a fence post, but who knows. And then finally in 1969, Augie Myers comes out and joins him in San Francisco and end up recording Mendocino, which if you've not listened to that album, it's a fantastic album.
That may be my favorite thing he's ever done.
It's up there with me.
Careful, ladies and gentlemen. The song Mendocino, if you hear that, just know that that's what you're going to be hearing for the rest of the day, bouncing around in your head.
It's such a great album. That album hits number 27 on the Billboard Hot 100. And then that's the same year he's on the Playboy After Dark thing that we talked about. He ends up getting a little burnt out on the whole California scene. And he ends up moving back to San Antonio in 1971. He releases Return of Doug Saldana, which with the Sir Douglas Quintet. Do we know why it's called that, guys?
because he got nicknamed that by the Chicanos.
They said,
or the Hispanic
said,
people.
They said he needed a name.
He was too authentic not to have a Hispanic name.
Yeah, so they gave him the name Doug Saldana.
It's like in Mexico where they named me Tejano Loco. Tano means Texas. I don't remember what loco means.
Anyway, the cool thing about that album is it's got a version of Wasted Days and Wasted Nights on it.
Is that right?
And it ends up kind of restarting Freddie Fender, who was the original singer of that song, his career. It gives him a bump because people realize what a great song that is. And so, and then he's on Rolling Stone, the cover of Rolling Stone again that same year. And then he moves to Austin.
And he becomes, it was inevitable.
Yeah, he becomes part of the whole, what do we call it?
The hippie.
Cosmic cowboy.
Armadillo World Headquarters hippie scene. Yep.
And he disbands.
Where you got your K-Vet bumper sticker on one side, and you got your Goat Ropers Need Love bumper sticker on the other side, and you got your Onward Through the Fog bumper sticker on the rear mirror of your Ford Ranger pickup.
Yep.
And you work all day, and then you come home with your long hair and go out and listen to music. At Austin, that part of Austin's gone, by the way, ladies and gentlemen.
There's still pockets.
Little colonies in South Austin where Tony lives.
That's right. shout out to Sam's Town Point. Yep. Anyway, for those of you listening. And then in 72, he disbands the quintet and decides to go it solo, which kind of brings us to the whole Jerry Wexler thing. We talked about this a little bit with Willie, right? That Atlantic
tried to do a country division.
And they wanted to headquarter in Nashville, and Jerry Wexler's like, Nashville? There ain't no soul right now in Nashville. Because Jerry Wexler came from that R&B tradition, and to his credit, his whole thing was he wanted to find country people that had soul to them. And so the two main people he seeks out are Willie Nelson and Doug Somm.
And he comes to Texas. Mm-hmm. You know why?
Yeah. Why?
Because if you're going to live in Texas, you got to have a lot of soul. It's the home of Willie Nelson.
It is.
Yeah. It's the home of Western Swing.
It is.
Makes you proud to be from Austin.
He has to buy, so he signs Willie, but he has to buy out Doug Somm's contract from Mercury so he can start recording with him. He's a huge. It's funny too because he's a huge Doug Somm fan. I mean, I think that one, like, he knew who he wanted when he came here. It wasn't like he showed up and was like, oh, hey, whatever. I forgot another connection, guys.
Oh no.
We've been here before.
When Wexler was in Austin, Doug Somm said, "You have got to go see this guitarist, this blues guitarist that I've been seeing. He's fantastic." So he takes Jerry Wexler to see Stevie Ray Vaughan at the Continental Club. And because of that, Jerry Wexler calls up a friend of his who's in charge of the Montreal? And says, "You got to get this guy. You got to get this
beginning
guy
of
on the bill." So he gets on the Montreal whatever blues festival, jazz or blues festival. Yeah. And at that festival is where Bowie sees him and where Jackson Browne sees him. And Jackson Browne is so enamored, he gives him free studio time to come and record his album.
And I think Bowie used him on a particular record.
Yeah. But the album we talked about, I believe, was the one. Wasn't that the one that Jackson Browne helped him with?
Yeah.
So the album we did the podcast, the Stevie Ray Vaughan podcast on. So there's a connection. Sorry to go that route, but I completely forgot about that.
Well, it's all the world's a circle. I think it's cool that he was in American Graffiti, more American Graffiti. Oh,
that's what, in 79? Well, he's in a couple of movies, right?
Uh-huh.
He's in a movie with Kris Kristofferson.
Yep.
And then he gets tapped to be in American Graffiti 2.
I can't believe he could have had, you never saw him live, but whenever you see him live, he is just a presence.
Charismatic.
Yeah, very charismatic. I can't
believe he was a little happy.
Like, yeah.
That's the thing about this record. We should have warned people at the beginning. If you want to be deep, meaningful, and miserable, get away from this record.
Right.
This is just fun.
It is odd looking back from where we are now that he's not more well-known outside of certain circles.
Right.
I saw an article that was written for some San Antonio magazine or some San Antonio magazine said essentially that they were going to talk about him and it may be somebody that most of you haven't heard of. And that just made me sad.
Yeah.
That is
sad.
Because this guy's legacy.
San Antonio, musically is so different than Austin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. They don't elevate people the same way we do, I don't think.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, he was a good looking guy. I mean, before he.
I thought Tony was in charge of that. I'm sorry.
But I don't know when he gained all that weight, but he looked like a tall, just almost like a. Well, he had that really long hair.
There's that iconic picture of him holding the. Is it a pearl?
I know what you're talking
about.
Where
he's got the pearl out in front of him with a can of
pearl. That's a bear, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah.
And it is this great iconic photograph of him. And you're right. I mean, he's a charismatic person. And you watch, like you said, Doug, when you watch these videos of him, you can't help but think, boy, that is a guy that would be fun to see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, he was fun. He was a lot of fun.
And all y'all need to get on Austin City Limits and look at his shows on Austin City Limits.
We'll put a couple of videos on the website of that particular, the one you played. I think that's 75, maybe 76. Anyway.
Yeah.
So are we ready to go into this record?
I think so.
I believe we are.
I do want to say that I think we didn't get a listener's choice specifically for this album. Somebody said, a couple of people said, you need to talk about Doug Somm. And we struggled a little bit with that because there's a whole lot of stuff we could talk about. I mean, we could have done what we did with Bob Wills with this guy, I think, if we
wanted to.
And I think that would almost have been, I'll get to this one later, but he writes songs. I mean, he performs songs. He doesn't write, especially in the later days, he didn't write that many songs, but he's not an album oriented guy. Let's put it that way. I think he's more of a song oriented dude.
Well, that may have something to do with his background and the whole focus on singles and the Beatlemania stuff, you know?
Right.
But anyway.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, our first song on this album is going to be come up in just a little bit. We're going to talk about who plays on this album,
Let's go through some of the people that are on this album. We already mentioned Fathead Newman, who was a Texan. Very, very... There's a lot of Texans on this album, by the way. Augie Myers and Fathead Newman. Yeah. You got somebody... I don't think we've ever talked about this guy before. Dr. John is on this album.
Dr. John... You know why he's on this album?
I do not know why he's on this
album. Because Jerry Wexler had just produced his album before this. What was it? Dr. John's Gumbo, I think. So Jerry Wexler said, I just produced this guy. I think you might want to get him on playing piano. So that's why he is on it. But we have not talked about Dr. John.
Yeah, can't believe we haven't talked about Dr. John in all these episodes. Dr. John was a really good keyboardist, and he produced some albums. He actually produced a Van Morrison album. He performed with the band on the Last Waltz. I guess his biggest hit was Such a Night or one of those. Anyway, he was a great keyboardist and actually played some guitar as well.
And I think Dr. Teeth from The Muppets is based on him.
Yeah. Just that out. I think that's right. Then you got Bob Dylan, of course. He's on here playing. He actually plays lead guitar on a song, which... We'll get to that song later. And he actually wrote one of the songs on here. The first recording of one of his songs.
I think it's a second recording. I think he recorded it the year before. Second, but it's the first time it was released.
First time it was released, right.
So, great song.
But anyway, that's it. And then we got Augie Myers, great keyboardist. Actually plays some guitar on this album. And then that's... Anybody else we need to mention, you think?
Flaco.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, we can't forget about Flaco Jimenez. You talk about a showman. He's the button accordion player on this, and he really makes...
And he stands out on the album cover.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, and just to, there's a couple of guys, not just Augie, but Jack Barber, who plays bass, who was the bassist for the Sir Douglas Quintet, is on here, even though he broke up the band. Atwood Allen, who sang, what we talked about, sang harmony, he's on here. Jack Walrath, who was a jazz trumpeter who played with Charles Mingus which is bizarre.
I forgot about that.
And we talked about some other people. David Bromberg, who is a Dobo's slide guitar player.
Yeah.
What did Doug Somm play on this album other than guitar?
He played just about everything. He played the mandolin. He played does the twin fiddles.
He's doing that fiddle that's going on the first song.
Yeah.
He plays the, and I don't know how to say this, is it bajo sexto?
Bajo sexto.
Bajo sexto. What is that?
It's a, it's a, like a guitar. It's basically like a guitar, only the tuning's a little. Is it real low?
Because it's bajo?
I don't know if it's, I don't know why they call it.
It's big though, right?
It's bigger than a guitar.
Is it, what, is it?
It's like a 12-string, kind
of. Is it something they play in mariachi bands?
Yeah, they play it a lot in mariachi bands. There's a bajo sexto and a bajo quinto, I believe is the other one.
And we'll have to look those words up later, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, and the thing, we'll talk about it when we get to the songs, but what I found really interesting about this is when he slides into the blues songs, it's almost like it's given him an opportunity to show what a fabulous guitarist he is, because he's a really good guitarist. Really something good people I don't think about with him.
Well, I mean, because they people that probably know him from the Texas Tornadoes when he's just up there dancing.
Well,
that's
because
I don't think people connect him to the blues because he never had a blues hit,
and right?
And that doesn't stand out as a blues artist as much as when he's creating these new sounds,
right?
Uniquely him.
But the thing that stood out to me about the songs really was like, God bless America, that guy can play a guitar.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, so just kind of took me by surprise.
And oddly enough, he doesn't play pedal steel on this album.
He does not play pedal steel on this. Pedal steel is played by a Fort Worth gentleman named Charlie Owens.
Huh. There you go.
There you are.
We need some pedal steel. Sometimes you got to go up there to Fort Worth, go to the stockyards and spook one out.
Yep.
All right. How about a song?
Let's hear it.
This is a song asking, is anyone going to San Antonio?
Boy, what a good song.
It's just a beautiful collection of instruments there. Got those fiddles going, you got that pedal steel, and you got Augie.
It's like he threw the gauntlet down and said, all right, you want to know what Texas music is?
Yeah.
Let me give you a little sample of what Texas music sounds like. I can't hear that song without smiling the entire time.
Who wrote that song? The lyrics are excellent.
So, well, it's an interesting story about that. Is written by Glenn Martin and Dave Kirby. But as we talked about before we started, Charlie Pride recorded this first in 1970 on his Charlie Pride's 10th album. What a remarkable name for an album. it was the first single on that album. It was his third number one hit in a row. It hit number one on the country charts. The reason why I said it's interesting is Charlie Pride's manager, Jack Johnson, rewrote it, changed the chords and the lyrics and the overall arrangement so it would fit Charlie Pride better. He didn't get any writing credit for it. So the version we all know was actually changed by Jack D. Johnson, Charlie Pride's manager at the time.
Well, the lyrics are really exceptional.
Yeah.
And they're not deep and meaningful, but they're just expressive and just well put together.
It's a similar song. I mean, it's obvious when you think about it. It's a similar song to the Streets of Bakersfield.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Very it's a lot similar, like that.
Song, subject matter, and same feeling. Although, I guess they both make me smile a little bit. Flacco's on a version of the Streets of Bakersfield later on, too. So, there you go.
There you go. That's a connection to an album that we're not connected to.
The twin fiddles on this are great. And it's Doug Somm and this guy named Kenny Cossack. And as I mentioned, Charlie Owens. The steel on this album is so good. Fantastic.
Yeah. It reminds me of a guy in an inner tube floating down the river and fiddles and steel guitar and accordions are just above his head floating around at the same place.
Yeah.
It's like just a wonderful.
Disney.
And they're coming in and out and they're all happy together. No one's trying to show off.
River race
Flacco said that Doug Somm changed his life. Because he was playing very traditional music because his dad was an accordionist, a really well-known accordionist as well. Flacco's dad was.
Yeah.
I wish I could remember his first name, but
Santiago.
Santiago, thank you. And Doug Somm said,
"St. James."
He said, "Man, you don't have to be stuck in that genre.
Yeah,
spread your wings a little bit."
Yep.
And so he started. He's like, "Oh, you mean you can add accordion to rock and roll? You can add accordion."
Oh man, just
and
hearing.
So yeah, and so that this album sort of brought that out in him, and now he's kind of all over the place.
He's everyone's go-to.
He's and the humblest guy in the world. I mean, but he played with. If you ever want to see him in action, really, he plays accordion, that button accordion on a version of Tatler with Ryan.
Oh, Cooter. Really?
Yeah, it is super. It is really, really good.
There's another connection.
And I think you have to, when he's about to break out, you have to yell his name before he starts playing.
Yeah. What is he called? Flautita or something like that?
I mean, the Mavericks have, what is that Maverick song that Flacco's on? And they, right before he breaks out, they're like, "Flacco!" And Doug Somm does at least three times on this album.
The I can't tell you how many shows I've been to where all of a sudden, here comes Flacco. We need a little Flacco in here.
I've seen him. I don't know how many times I've seen. Yeah, he just seems to show up.
And he's never wanting attention. He's you want me to come play? Okay, I'll play. Okay, I'll go.
He just got that little smile, that smile on his face, and he's just sitting there.
The weird thing is that Dylan's co-lead sing on this song.
Yeah, he does.
Co-leads. Co-sings the lead on this song.
He's in such demand as a singer all over the...
Well, you can't really hear him much. Yeah. I mean, there's other songs you can definitely hear, but not so much on this one. So I think it bears mentioning one last thing before we move on to the next song. This song is a lot like Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain in that it was a song recorded by somebody else. It was a hit by somebody else, but it was essentially taken over by the person who recorded it.
Right.
I mean, I think everybody, at least in this room, associates this song with Doug Somm. I love the Charlie Pride version.
I couldn't remember who sang it, but I thought it was Freddie Fender.
Well, and I think...
I bet he did sing it eventually.
Yeah. Probably. But I love the Charlie Pride version, but Doug Somm owns this. This is his song.
And
it's hard to believe he didn't write it.
It is very hard
to believe
that.
Until we did this podcast, I didn't know he didn't write it.
Yeah. And it's so perfect for him to show off.
Yep. Yeah. As he says,
mixture.
This is a song about my hometown.
Yep.
Yep.
Absolutely.
That's one of the things that happened, I really like on this is that he says he gives you the key that they're in some of the songs are in to start off. Hey, we're in G. So that just makes you know that the band is not that well rehearsed, but man, they've come alive quite a bit.
Yeah. There's not. You definitely say there's a relaxed tone to this album.
I think this might be different than Peter Gabriel in the studio.
Yeah.
Speaking of Peter Gabriel, up next is a song called "It's Gonna Be Easy."
Telling myself.
What a great song.
Yeah, if you don't like that,
I'm going to show you the door.
Yeah, this is...
You're a horrible person.
This is a song written by Atwood Allen, the guy that had to hide behind the curtain.
And he's singing on it, too.
He does. You know, this song, to me, if you were to boil down... And it's tough to do because he's so prolific in different genres. But if you were to boil down something that sounds like Doug's song, the way this song starts off just has that kind of beat, rhythm, whatever you want to say, that if I heard somebody else playing this, I'd go, that's a Doug Somm ripoff.
Yeah, there's something about Doug Somm that makes me never think of a band playing inside.
Yeah. a smoke. I always think of either outside or in a smoky.
I always think of bare light bulbs, concrete dance floor, bunch of people with big smiles on their faces, shoving food and Lone Star beer.
Yeah.
I'm getting homesick.
One of the things that I like about this song, to me, this is the most bird sounding. Like, it almost sounds like it could have come out, like they could have done it for Sweetheart of the Rodeo.
Well, it's definitely. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but it's got such those fiddles, and it's got the pedal steel, and it's like those. They almost shouldn't be on the album. I mean, they almost shouldn't be on this song because of the way that it is. But they work so well. I absolutely love the way that.
Well, that when it gets to that second verse and they repeat, it's going to be easy, and mm-hmm. then you get that that is just the greatest.
Yeah,
it's the greatest. I love it. Yeah.
And then they repeat the line.
This song reminded me of how seldom he sings by himself. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's almost always accompanied by someone else.
Yeah, there's a few songs. I think the blues songs he sings by himself.
That's an exception.
But
I guess it's hard to do harmony on the blues. Yeah.
You have to say Dylan's in the mix on the vocals on this, but who knows?
Way down. Say, yeah. Yes, go ahead, Mr. Zimmerman. Turn that knob down.
That steel solo on this song, though, is
I love the way it's like a bird that is coming to land, and it goes tweet tweet, and then it does a little hop and comes back down.
Yeah,
love that.
Man.
And the way that this album does this on so many songs, it has that sort of underlying track of the dobro, the piano, and the organ.
Yeah,
just that kind of low static hum underneath the songs is just exactly really right. Really great.
This may be my favorite song on the album.
It would be if it weren't for another song.
Mm-hmm. Now, ladies and gentlemen, some excitement. Which will Tony pick? We ought to start doing our format more like The Bachelor. With little excitement deals, and you like be hand people roses when they have to leave. Except we don't have anyone that ever leaves. All right, ladies and gentlemen, there
except
is.
For the listeners.
Yeah, all right, they do that. We can't. We'd go broke by the roses for all the ones that turned us off before we're done. Speaking of our listeners, otherwise known as your friends, we got a song called Your Friends.
That's the case. It has gone the wings of the bird. Until next time, to Bluesville. Down memory lane. T. Don't let your friends turn you against me, baby. They ain't give you one red cup of sin. Your friends turn you against me, baby. Oh, I give you one red cup of sin. When I leave you this time, baby.
Well, T. Mm-hmm. I'm impressed that he calls out your name at the beginning of the song.
Especially in a blues song.
Yeah, I know. Maybe he's trying to be an ambassador for the blues with T. The power pop Tony gets a hand out.
His guitar playing reminds me a lot of his blues guitar playing reminds me a lot of B.B. King.
Yeah, I think so too.
It sounds well.
What's he playing?
I don't know. It sounds like a hollow body gets
it sounds like that to me, but yeah. I'm very hesitant to say.
And obviously we didn't get to the point, but for anybody out there interested in it, pull the song up and get to the solo, because it is like,
I want to say one thing about the solo, and I don't think this is a criticism, but it's an observation. It might be a criticism, I don't know. This is weird. I find it to be a little hesitant. And the image that came to my mind while I was listening to this was a man walking with his dog. And the man's steps are the vocals. The dog's steps are the guitar. You know, that call and response that you do in the blues. And I kept seeing a man
yanking his dog.
Sometimes the dog gets in front of the man and starts dragging him. Huh. But this one wanted to smell a bunch of stuff and wants to sit down. So I don't know what created that impression. My first impression was, I didn't know he played so well.
Yeah.
Even though I've heard this record, I haven't listened to it like you listen hard when you're doing it for the show.
Yeah.
And I thought, But there was something. I don't know what that is. And I hope one of our brilliant listeners will call in and tell me what I'm thinking about.
So it's no surprise that I don't like this stuff as much as I like the country-esque stuff.
Yeah.
But I do want to say, outside of the guitar playing, which kind of was, I was like you. I was like, I didn't know he could play that well.
Yeah.
I think his vocals are fantastic on this song.
I like
they're fantastic.
Quite a bit. Yeah.
And they seem, he seems in his element, which is an odd thing. He's very comfortable singing this stuff.
Yeah. You know? I think he is in his element if you take seriously what he said about growing up next door to all
but,
that.
But not everybody could pull that off and sound as comfortable as he is singing this stuff and the style he's singing. I mean, he sounds real, and he's not trying to do some sort of weird affectation. He's just singing like Doug Somm, and he sounds great.
Yeah.
You know?
This was written by a Jewish kid from Houston.
Dedrick Malone?
Dedrick Malone.
Huh.
He goes, his real name was Don Diedrich Roby. But yeah, he was, he founded Peacock Records.
Oh.
Kind of a blues, Louisiana, East Texas blues label. But yeah, it's just it's surprising that it's written by a white kid from upper middle class background in Houston.
JM is certainly focused on the race of everyone tonight.
He does seem to be. I agree.
I just, anyway.
All right.
Well, I thought this would be like Gate Mouth Brown or somebody like that. And
well, it reminds me of that famous record, Honkies Get the Blues Too. Is there a record called that? There should be.
I have no idea.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that we're leaving your friends behind. We're going to track number 4, Poison Love.
All that poison love is changing my blood and my heart and soul. All my pleas have all been in vain for you and you alone, dear. And I know that you have guilty of shame.
You want to know?
Okay,
what,
I'm going to make a statement right now, and then I'm going to follow it up with a statement. This is Tony's favorite song.
This is my favorite song.
And this is my favorite song.
I was about to say, I want to take my favorite song back.
You already put your flag in the ground.
If you've heard the original of this, you know, it's sort of a standard. It's a good song. It's a standard country song. What Doug Somm does to the song, and this song's been covered by a ton of people. Jerry Lee Lewis, Alison Krauss, Chet Atkins, T-Bone Burnett, Mel Tillis, even Emmy Lou Harris. None of them make this song their own like this, like Doug Somm does on this. And it has almost everything to do with Flaco Jimenez playing the accordion.
I think, and Augie too, man. They both just.
Its song went through the Doug Sommanator and came out the other end. And I don't like dancing, but if I heard this, I think I might dance.
This song is, it's hard to sit still listening to this. This is a song more than anyone I'll just hit repeat and listen to it again.
Yeah.
It's so fun.
It's a blast.
And it's got all the elements we're talking about tonight.
It is a perfect example of what he does best. I mean, it's like you take, like you said, go through the Doug Sommanator. He takes all these elements, puts them in a blender. And what he does is it comes out and it's unique. It transcends all those other genres. But it doesn't feel like a novelty. Somebody else doing this, it would feel
you're
like a
right,
novelty
you're right.
song.
That's he never novelizes it with his his quirky way. It's and it doesn't sound like he's doing something to the song. It's like the song went and got dressed up itself and came out like this.
Yeah,
like there's not to throw anyone under the bus, but like because I like this song, but the Derailers do a version of Raspberry Beret that they essentially Bakersfield it up. And it's great, but there's a novelty element.
You're saying, or when that's that guy, I heard a real good country band doing Believe, the Cher song, and they did a fine job with it, and it sounded good. I said, of course, it sounded better than Cher. There's a problem with a 60-year-old woman talking about trying to recover from her 38th love affair or something, but it was good, but. It had that idea like, oh, okay, we're doing something cute here.
Yeah.
You're right. Doug Somm avoids that I think he's just not self-conscious at all, and it comes across.
And it's not like he's thinking, oh, you know what I'll do is I'll take this old country song and I'll add some Tejano elements to it and make it. No, he's just like, this is how this song is.
You know how I think he does this? What his method is? I think he gets a song, talks to the band for about 5 minutes, and then I think he says, 1, 2, 3, four, and well, they go.
I mean, that's obvious because he says he's telling the band what key they're at in some cases.
So, I think what he did is he put this band together.
Yeah,
and they know what they do, and he just plugs the song out, and here it comes.
And think about that for a minute. Jerry Wexler signs this guy. He's putting out his first solo album, and he gets this group of guys to play on this album. It's pretty remarkable. An album that at the time, now it's since in retrospect been treated differently, but at the time was not thought of as being anything special. Yeah. It's pretty remarkable.
I would expect that to happen to this album.
Yeah.
Because there's not a handle for it.
Right. Yeah.
You got to say, I'm going to sit down and figure this out and enjoy it. There's not a simple hit that you can grab a hold of and figure out.
Yeah.
And he just can't stay put.
Well, that's
we're
a good
about
point.
To do another song here that's nothing like the two that came before it.
That's a really valid point. He does seem like he can't, he has an inability to just stay put, which is good. It's fun, you know. But
let's talk about a real successful album, the Cars album.
Yeah.
You hear one Cars song, and then you hear My Best Friend's Girl, and you get an idea what the rest of the album is going to be like.
You're not getting that here.
Not here.
No
you,
sir.
You get no genre comfort. Mm-hmm. You're gonna be all over the place. And if you don't dig a whole bunch of different kinds of music like Bob Dylan does, you're gonna have a reaction,
right? Yeah. And there's no crunchy guitars. There's no. I don't know what was big in the 70s then.
Even the harmonies aren't like harmonies.
The harmonies aren't Beatlesque harmonies.
No, there's something else going on there. Especially when we get to the next song, which is fantastic.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a song called Wallflower.
Wallflower, wallflower, won't you dance with me? I'm sad and lonely too.
So I have a question for you guys. How did they get the recording equipment to follow Doug Somm and Bob Dylan out of the bar as they stumbled home singing this at the top of their lungs? I mean, is that not what it sounds like? Two guys like arm in arm, staggering down the road.
Did you see that pretty girl that didn't dance with anybody all night? She just stood there against the wall. I wish I would have talked to her. Yeah. She's gone now. Wallflower. That's exactly what it sounds like. I don't know if that's intentional or not. It may be that this was recorded in the wee hours of the morning when they didn't have to affect that.
Yeah,
maybe so. I mean, the original version, if you've listened to it, the one Dylan recorded that was released several years later.
It was a bootleg.
It was on his bootleg thing.
Yeah.
It's a pretty straightforward waltz with nice steel guitar. It's a good song, and I like that version. But it's not this.
No.
What's this? Is this derivative of the folk song Wallflower?
Well, that's what I was. I almost thought this was. Yeah. I thought this was.
I wonder if this is like he did with some other tunes where
he makes kind of
takes a folk song and turns it into a Dylan original.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, you can help us with that with your own personal research.
Yep.
And of course, Dr. John shines on this song.
He does. That organ. He's got such a neat touch with the organ, how you can control the volume of it so much, and you using those stops.
I wonder when we're going to get a Dr. John album recommended to us.
I can't believe we haven't had one.
You think that would have happened by now?
Mm-hmm.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we took a little departure from the blues, but we're going to get some. This is the funky blues.
I That's a Doug Somm original.
Well, yeah, and all you have to do is listen to further listen to the lyrics. There's a line about eating mushrooms and jalapenos. It just, it's, if that's not Doug Somm, I don't know what is.
Now, earlier I said during Poison Love that this is the kind of song that would make me want to dance.
Mm-hmm. Is this?
No. This is the kind of song that no middle-aged white man should get up and dance to, because they're going to stick that gut out, they're going to do the underbite, and they're going to try to act funky.
But in up until about 15, 20 years ago, that's exactly who would have been dancing this in Austin.
Oh, that's exactly right. That's exactly... How many times have you seen that? Where the guys up there?
I remember being at the book festival one time, and there was some band playing, and one of those guys was in front of the stage at the book festival. Was like,
and they think the time of his life. They forget that they weigh 75 pounds more than they did in high school, and that their belly's covering up three of the musicians from everyone's view. Now, I've got a question for you guys, you music experts. How do you tell if a song is funky?
by the odor? I have no idea.
Well, I think it's definitely the beat's kind of a...
Much simpler than that.
Oh, much simpler. It's got a bass line.
If it makes you want to say, yow.
Yeah. It's funny.
This is a fun song. It's got fun horns in it.
Well, it's that David Fathead Newman solo in the middle.
Oh, man, that solo is like, amazing. Jeez. Yeah, I got that in my notes. It is so
it's
good.
It's just, again, ladies and gentlemen, if you're trying to whack-a-mole and stay in the genre, here we are popping out way over so somewhere good. Else.
Well, it's weird because, you know, Doug Somm does something to these songs that doesn't make me not want to listen to them. They're blues songs. I don't typically gravitate towards this stuff, but I never once listened to this album wanted to hit skip. And sometimes I found myself, if I was alone, doing that little dance you're talking about. So
the don't do that when your wife's around. You just humiliate her, and she's been through enough. It's a fun, I think what you're talking about is, I don't want to skip it, even though I'm not supposed to like this. It's just fun.
Yeah, that's the thing. This whole album is infused
soaked
in
fun.
Yep. It is, yeah.
Yep.
We got another song.
We're going to flip the album over.
Yeah, it was the last, that was the closing song on the first side.
That's right. Jim, could you reach up there and flip that sucker over? We're going.
You got something wrong with your turntable. It's making weird noises, Doug.
Yeah. It's making Forbidden Planet robot noises. This song is one I'm
I
not.
Heard, I've heard
I'm
this. Not, I haven't heard this before.
I'm not, I wasn't familiar with it until we started working on this song.
Yeah, I never heard
this
it.
This is a song called Faded Love.
Our faded love. I miss you, darling, more and more every day.
Should we say it together?
Aha!
Maybe not faded, just a shade paler. This is a song about perverts watching Dove.
Mate.
Have sex.
Yeah.
you remember Kent, we used to play this song, and it would come out, as we watched the mating of the dove, and me and Brad look at each other and go, pervert.
Well, so who wrote this song, or co-wrote this song, Doug?
This is Bob and his dad, Jim, is that right?
I believe so.
That's Bob Wills, ladies and gentlemen. If actually, if you're in Texas right now and you didn't know who wrote that song and who did the original of it, you should deport yourself. Go to Arkansas or something like that. This is a great classic Texas tune, and he does a fine job.
He does a fine job. I did mention earlier...
Y'all should sing together. That was good.
I did mention earlier that Jerry Wexler said, and I'm assuming he's not thinking of the original, that this is the best version of the song he'd ever heard. Again, I like this version a whole lot, but yeah. He didn't hear Patsy Cline sing it, I guess, because that is a fine, fine version of that song. That's
great. Well, I wouldn't want to go up against Patsy on
who would?
Singing songs.
So you got the twin fiddles again on this.
Yeah.
And
he plays this one pretty straight.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
He doesn't make very many alterations.
This is kind of going back to what he cut his teeth on. This is he was playing when he was 6, 7 years old.
It has to be one of the first 10 songs he heard in his life.
Yeah.
And I love whatever the steel's doing. There's like these little
twinkly harmonics
flourishes that he's doing. It's just nice.
He gets the side of his palm and he picks right in front of the
is he getting harmonics? Is that what
he's
doing?
Getting the harmonics out of it.
It sounds great.
Yeah.
And again, this is Atwood.
Is Atwood he singing? Does he take the first verse? I can't tell who's that. Didn't sound like
Didn't
Doug
sound like Doug. Doug Somm. I don't know.
Of course, he can sound like a lot of different.
Yeah,
he can.
He's got a chameleon voice. Yeah.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's never a bad idea to put a classic Bob Wills number on your album.
Yeah.
And that brings us to track number 8, Blues, Stay Away From Me.
One more time, and that's it. Oh, you're all right. Let's try one more again. Let's get that same tempo.
Is that Bobby?
It is.
Still I can't be. Stay away from me.
All right, so it sounds like a more casual approach to recording.
This
is Vinyl Tap approach to recording.
Another late night. I mean, you got the cough in there. Yeah. They don't even bother to remove the cough. It's like a demo that they just went, what the hell.
This is just the weirdest song. It you would never think to put a blues Flaco Jimenez solo in the middle of. Like, I didn't know you could make a.
It's good, man.
It is good.
No, I tell you what. I think with a song like this, that whole approach works very well.
Yeah.
I think it holds my attention much better than if these guys were trying to take it seriously.
This sounds like a Basement's Tape.
Well, you can really hear Dylan on this song. I mean, it's like, he just...
he sounds like Dylan trying to sound like Dylan.
yep, absolutely.
who wrote that number?
Delmore Brothers, I think, right?
Is that who wrote it?
I think so.
Yeah.
All right. We got number 9 coming up, and it's called Papa Ain't Salty.
Okay, shuffle. I run it. G, a 1, 2, 3. Give me the blues, babe. Some horns. Come home, little girl. Papa ain't salt no more.
Yeah. I think everybody that was playing on this album didn't want to stop. I think they probably all wanted to go on tour together.
Yeah.
That sounds so fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is the best of the blues numbers, I think, on the album. The playing is just really, really good.
And we got someone hollering out to the band again like the old Bob Wills days.
Yeah.
Why did that stop? I have no idea. That ought to just be standard.
Yeah.
Except on Rush albums. I don't know if it'll work. I'm Getty.
That's funny.
Take me home, Alex.
Tell me about those priests.
Wow. Okay, going back to song. Augie Myers is great on the piano.
Oh, yeah, he is.
It's fun.
Yeah. I didn't realize he's such a good piano player. I mean, I knew he was a good, like, Farfisa organ player, but he's just, he's a much better keyboardist than I thought.
T-Bone Walker song, yeah. Right?
It's one of the most shuffly shuffles I've ever heard. In fact, ladies and gentlemen, I had to get out of my chair and slide my feet across the carpet here.
He did an admirable impression of the shuffle.
I wanted to put my hush puppies on for that one.
Yeah, the bride's father. Great job doing it, bride.
You just needed a skullet.
Yeah. Well, that's a fine song. I don't know what else to say about it other than go listen to it.
And yeah. Again, you know, those are the songs where you can step back and hear how, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but I'm going to, how good a guitarist Doug Somm is.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think it bears repeating just because I don't think people think of that.
They don't. Yeah. They don't. They think about the sunglasses, the hat, mm-hmm. yeah. the kahunta,
yeah.
and the fun. Again, I keep saying outdoors because I can't imagine this inside.
It's like that scene at the end of Fandango.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yep,
exactly.
The wedding. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go to a song by another Texan called Me and Paul. It's not Barnabas.
It's been a rough and rocky travel. I finally got my feet back on the ground. After taking several readings, find out that my mind still fairly sound. I thought Nashville was lovely, but I guess I said that now.
Well, fellas, who's me and who's Paul?
Me is Willie, and Paul is his drummer, longtime drummer Paul English, yeah. who was, I guess, his best friend.
Yeah.
They worked together almost his whole career.
Yeah, mm-hmm. pretty much.
And apparently they had some adventures and some misadventures.
Yeah, I think that's what the song is about, is that and in particular, I think Paul English tended to draw the attention of people, and Willie got
Paul English looks like an outlaw.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
He's got the whole deal.
He wore a cape for a while, didn't he?
Did he really?
He should. If he didn't, somebody should have suggested that. He was the man in black before Johnny Cash, and he had the Satan beard.
Yeah.
He forgot about, yeah.
This was on the album Yesterday's Wine. It's weird to take something that's so well known as an autobiography. It's like singing a song that somebody wrote about their wife and covering it. Yeah. But it works and it's fun.
Well, you're not going to talk about the harmonica playing on it?
I think that is funny.
It's your favorite harmonica player too.
I think
Southside Johnny.
I'm being facetious.
I think
it's Dylan. I know it's Dylan.
I think that Bromberg guy playing Dobro is trying to.
Cover it up.
Him out. Yeah. Well, it's
well. How do you take it out? You can't take it out of his hands, right? Not if he's good, if he pulls his harmonica up to his mouth, you can't go. Yeah, please don't.
But think, be positive. Think how much worse it could have been.
It's not. It's not bad.
That's just Dylan sticking in a couple of puffs where they don't belong. He could have done so much
you're
worse.
Right. He could have.
He could have done what is it I mean, that what's it, 16 minutes song, Sad Eye Lady of the Lowland.
Yeah, yeah. The last song, Blonde.
I mean, the best, and we've talked about this, the best Dylan harmonica is when he's punctuating a joke with it. That's when it works really well.
That's when it's his.
Yeah. So you mentioned the Dobro. I think the reason this song, you said, so I agree with you, Doug. I don't think that the song's that much out. It is weird that for all the things you
it
said.
It is kind of intruding in somebody's little relationship with
it. It is. But the Dobro and the horns really make this song pop.
See, I don't. That's the thing to me is that it doesn't. This song is a slurring, like, look how sad we are. And then you put those punchy horns in there. That to me doesn't work. The Dobro works.
Well, I don't think of sad. I think
it's
sad. So ironic and.
And this
one of the problems is Willie's version is so perfect.
It's just a fantastic song.
Didn't he re-record it later too, Willie?
I'm sure he did.
This is the song that has him playing the whatever that big guitar.
Oh, Sexto.
Yeah.
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 So that's another one. Like, yeah.
And then he whistles on the way out of it too.
Does he?
Yeah, Doug Song. There's a little whistle.
I think I've listened to this like 3 or 4 times that I'm done. Because I love the. And I'm also going to say that I'm very biased because I love the original version of Me and Paul.
It's perfectly produced.
Yeah.
And it's almost a spoken piece with the great narrator.
It is.
I don't necessarily disagree that it's a little out of place on here. It doesn't, but it's not a song I would skip.
Oh, I wouldn't skip it. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I just,
You know what it feels like to me? I don't know how to describe this. It's like, it's got the same, this version has the same feeling to me as the Janis Joplin version of Me and Bobby McGee.
Yeah.
It's got that same
kind of. It's good, but it's not
anywhere near as good as.
But yeah, it's got.
It's not the authentic. I understand that. Yeah, that's a good, I'll go with that. I think that's fine. And when you make a good point like that, don't turn around. Oh, look, the next song. Don't turn around. Track 11.
You said you would leave if I ever went out again. But you said that guy was all just a friend. You told me about him then, and I wouldn't have felt so bad. Turn around.
Where's Freddie Fender?
Yeah. No, this is... so this song and the next song are both originals, Doug Song originals. This is another song that just makes me smile when I'm listening
to it.
It's another genre.
Yeah, it's like what, 50s?
Like 50s kind of doo-wop. Like something that a white guy covered that black guys wrote.
It would be something that you would be on the jukebox while Fonzie's trying to blow in a girl's ear.
And it works.
It does.
It works. It's
blowing in a girl's ear?
Oh, no. The song works. It's just
I've never
weird.
Gotten anywhere with that ear-blowing stuff.
But, I mean, seriously, this is unlike anything else on the album, and it works.
Yeah. No, that's
bizarre to me how he just slides in so
if you have any expectation of this guy staying on one island during your visit, you are going to be disappointed. You're going to be island hopping this whole time with all these different genres.
Yeah. But I really like it.
I do too.
And I think it's my favorite one he wrote on this.
And he plays the bass, the guitar, the organ, and the piano on
is
this song.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Wow. And you know what he does when he finishes playing one instrument? He gets off that instrument and moves to another.
Another segue.
That was so smooth. Anyway, I get off the next tune in HD. Would you end it that way?
This feels like the most Sir Douglas Quintet-y song on the album. I think it's an okay way to end it.
Do you think it's the organ that makes it more that way?
And that's Dr. John playing it too. Maybe. There's just something about the song, his vocals, like the
way that they're kind of double tracked.
Yeah. There's just something about it that feels like something he would have done with the Sir Douglas Quintet.
I agree.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good way. It's not, it's not like one of those songs where you're like, what a way to end the album, but I think it's a good way to end the album.
The thing about this album is he's been everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not, you're not going to tie it together.
Right.
And he hasn't taken you on this emotional voyage.
Right.
Yeah.
So you don't have to come back home. There's no home.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's a decent song. I mean,
I think it's the most interesting song on the album. Yeah. The key changes and the way that the horns are arranged, and I think it's not, I don't know if the key change, but the chord changes are really kind of unique.
Mm-hmm. There's lots of horns on it, too.
A lot of horns, and the horns
I like it.
Good.
And you know what I want to do when I get to this one?
Start over?
Start it over,
go
yeah.
back to the beginning.
Yeah.
Or go out and get with the drawing on the...
Groover's Paradise.
Groover's Paradise, yeah. It sets me up for Groover's Paradise.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's the album, boys. There's many more adventures in the story of Doug Somm following this album. Where do we go from here, Tony?
Well, he made a collection.
He made some highly rated albums after this in the years immediately following. And then he had some wobbly years.
Yeah.
He did. And you mentioned he was in 79. He was in American Graffiti 2.
Which I don't think I saw. Was that the Steven Spielberg?
You mean Lucas?
Yeah, Lucas one did. Of those guys.
I don't think Lucas had anything to do with it. He had host Star Wars. I don't think he cared.
Didn't know Lucas did Star Wars.
And I'm pretty sure Augie Myers is pretty much attached to him throughout most of this stuff, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Now, the interesting thing about, I will say this about Doug Somm, when you read about him, you realize how altruistic he was. He wanted to not only give up-and-coming people, but people who meant something to him, he wanted to rekindle the career. So the thing with Freddie Fender we talked about, he did the same thing with Rocky Erickson. He got Rocky Erickson back in the studio.
Is that right?
Left the hospital. He got Rocky Erickson back in the studio to start recording again and got his career started.
Good for him.
So there's a great picture of them, actually, the two of them with, I don't know who the third person is. Is
Rocky on his lap?
No. They're at the Soap Creek, but I don't remember who the third person is. It might be Jerry Jeff. That doesn't sound right. But anyway, it's a great picture of him and Rocky Erickson and somebody else. Yeah, so he was good at doing all that stuff. The thing that was sort of big towards the end of his career was he was in a band, a super group, if you will, called
the Texas Tornadoes.
This is the second time we've discussed Tornadoes. This is a connection with Tony's favorite album, El Dorado. We had a tornado in Laredo.
Well, and who was in the Texas Tornadoes? It was
Freddie Fender,
Augie,
and Myers, Flacco.
And Flacco. And he said, and what was it, Doug? He said that
the Traveling Wilburys had just happened, and he wanted to have a Texas version of the Traveling Wilburys.
I think a Tex-Mex version of it, and it's perfect. Yep. It was a perfect description of it.
And it was a great record. I love that record. It's a fun record, and everybody shines on that one.
And the big hit on it was that...
Who were you talking to? Who were you thinking of when we were, ladies and gentlemen, a man and a woman?
There's a lot better songs on that album.
Yeah.
But there wasn't Hey Baby, Que Paso.
Yeah, that was a big
hit. That was a big hit, too.
Hey, baby, what happened? That's anyway. Ladies and gentlemen, my wife says, what happens instead of Que Paso.
In 83, this is kind of a funny story. Augie Myers signed with a Swedish label, and they made some tours over there, and they released a single called Meet Me in Stockholm. It's from their Midnight Sun LP, and it was one of the biggest selling records ever in Scandinavia. In fact, two things. One is, he says, Swedish chicks were running up on stage and knocking him over, ripping his clothes. And number two, I'm not sure what ABBA song would have been big in 83, but it knocked that song off the top of the charts in Sweden. So
if you can knock ABBA off the charts in Sweden, you've accomplished something.
We got that song. Scandinavian way. You can take a boat, I'll take a plane. Long as we get there, baby, it's all the same.
I mean, it sounds like a Doug Somm tune.
It really does, yeah.
And he makes us aware of the fact that you could meet in Stockholm.
Mm-hmm.
Fine city,
sad part of this story is he ends up going on vacation in New Mexico, goes to Taos, unfortunately dies of a heart attack while he was on vacation.
58 years old?
Not way too young.
Yeah,
I didn't like the part where I figured out how old he was.
Oh, yeah.
Because I happen to be the same age, and I happen to love Taos, too.
Yeah, I actually saw him with Los Super 7. He came out for a couple of songs. They actually, the Los Super 7, for those who don't know who Los Super 7 is, they're kind of a, it's two members of Los Lobos, Max Faca, Samantha, I can't remember, somebody Fox.
Just Samantha Johnny, Fox.
Not Samantha
I Fox. I think she did a different job.
Yeah. Anyway, it's kind of a super group. It's kind of a Tejano super group. And Doug Somm, they do a Doug Somm song on there. And he actually came out and sang it with them. And that was about 6 months before he died, I believe. So.
And nobody knows why he had a heart attack. Was he, did he have conditions beforehand or?
Well, last time when I saw him, he did not look like healthy. The healthiest guy in the world. Yeah.
That's too bad. That's way too early. I bet he had some good stuff left to do.
Yeah.
Here's the impact this guy had though. So when the news broke that he died, musicians gathered at Antone's for an impromptu tribute. Antone's was a club here in Austin. Radio stations all over the city started playing it. The turnout at his funeral on the west side of San Antonio, estimated 1,000 people showed up for that.
Wow.
Jeez.
Yeah. They had to huddle around a loudspeaker outside because not everybody could fit inside to do it. Yeah. Wow. I mean, just, it's what kind of makes me sad when you see an article in San Antonio that says you may not know who this guy was, you know?
Yeah.
Where is he buried over there?
I don't know.
Sounds like a pilgrimage to me.
Yeah.
Maybe so. Maybe so. Yeah. So
go eat at Chris Madrid's and then go over and take a picture with Doug Somm. All right, boys. Well, we're at the end of the show. And as y'all know, every evening, when we get to the end of the show, we do a little review. First, mm-hmm. we give our heartfelt review where we let our emotions ooze all over the place, just like someone on the Oprah Winfrey show. And then we give our Spock review where we are completely rational and we judge the album for its merits.
Well, and we have the ability to have a little history behind this album. When this album came out, it was not very well received. That's it has since been, that's been changed,
that's
thankfully.
Changed quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, if anybody said it wasn't any good, they would be called a horrible person.
Yep.
Well, Jonathan J. M. Rowe, I think I'm going to go to you first since I can start wherever I want to tonight because okay. this is not a pick.
As a critic, I'm going to be kind of harsh. I'm going to give it 4 stars. And the reason why I'm going to give it 4 stars is the songs are great. The song selection, for the most part, is pretty good. I think they could have not had me and Paul on there. But, you know, who knows? Maybe people didn't know that song then. And I don't think that we needed another version of Faded Love. But again, this was released in 1972. Pretty sure a lot of people.
Okay, to have another version of Anybody Going to San Antonio 2 years after the original?
Yeah. definitely needed that.
Yeah, we definitely needed that version. And but the playing is really good. The production is a little sloppy on this. And I think that might be just because of the circumstances in which it was recorded. It was recorded in New York. In 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So, but it just sounds a little bit like a little like instruments are bleeding in.
And I think that I think they brought him to New York to try to kind of keep things under control a little bit.
I can understand that. Yeah. That's probably why I got Dylan.
You don't control Bob Wills and you don't control Doug Somm.
Nope. Yeah. So I'm going to give it 4 stars. My personal rating, it's going to be, I'm going to give it a 4.4. And I just, you know, being from Texas and just absolutely loving that kind of stew that come, and, you know, living in San Antonio for as long as I did, I just love, it just takes me back so much to that sound. And I just, it's like you were saying, Tony, he's a pretty much a quintessential Texas artist. And this is the playing on this, the songs, the instrumentation just makes it such a fun album for me to listen to. So yeah, 4.4 personal.
All right, JM, thank you for that. And Tony, what do you have to say about this with your heart and your head?
So taking my critic, donning my critic cap, I disagree with JM. I think one of the things looking at this critically is why it works so well is because of the sort of sloppiness to it. And mm-hmm. sloppiness is not the word I want to use. The
freedom.
The freedom to it, yeah, which lends itself to the overall atmosphere of the album. You can tell, and it's going to be difficult for me to disengage both my personal and my critic because I think they kind of overlap a little bit. You can tell the band's having a blast. I think, Doug, you said that it wasn't you that said you have a hard time thinking they ever wanted to stop. They just wanted to keep playing. Yeah, and I think, you know, there's a the musicians on this album are fantastic, and they all shine to a certain extent. And the fact that Doug Somm's guitar playing kind of overwhelmed me and just being as good as it was, I'm going to give it a 4 or 5 critically, and I'm going to give it the same thing personally because it's difficult for me to disengage. He is a quintessential Texas musician and is a blast to listen to. Lots of fun listening to Doug Somm, and he's just so influential to so many people I love. So,
Well, I'm going to give mine now, and it's going to be a little bit higher. One of the reasons it's elevated is because I'm trying to remember how weird this must have sounded when it came out and how original it was. So he's going to get a lot of points for originality from me. So as a critic, someone who could sit there and think technically while a bunny's being smothered, I could just consider what's happening without my heart being involved at all. I would say I'm going to give it a 4.8, and I'm going to give it a 4.9 emotionally, because
you're more Texan than me and J&M.
I know.
J&M.
I just,
and you wasn't even born in Texas.
Used to be Texas before.
What?
I was born in New Mexico. Yeah. Anyway,
how do I feel about that?
I got a document from Governor Connally making me an official Texan the day I was born. So we'll get into that later if you want to.
If you ask me.
Okay. I'll see. My people go back to the Civil War. So if I have to apologize for that, well, guess I'll do that. Anyway, there's nothing that makes me think of Austin in the 70s more than Doug Somm and these songs. So it's highly, highly, highly sentimental and just plain fun. And the older I get, the more fun rules over so deep and meaningful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
So that's it, ladies and gentlemen. And we're going to, as I mentioned earlier, Tony is such a young feller that he is able to keep up with these these kids and what they're listening to and the TikTok and all of that.
The TikTok.
Tony, do you have a recommendation for us this evening?
I do, and it's not much of a stretch. In fact, it's not that different from a recommendation I made several episodes ago, but I'm going to recommend the first Doug Somm tribute album that I ever listened. The Songs of Somm by the Bottle Rockets. It was released in 2002, so not that new, but it's really great. The thing that distinguishes it from the Sunvolt one is that this sounds like Doug Somm. I mean, Sunvolt or Doug Somm songs gone through the filter of Jay Farrar and Sunvolt. This is, you know, it's difficult to distinguish sometimes. So I'll play one tune. And so that's Float Away. That's the opening track. I want to play one more, which is one of my favorite Doug Somm songs, called Be Real, in their version of Be Real.
Be real, baby, be real. That's all I ask you, is baby, be real.
So yeah, that's Songs of Somm by the Bottle Rockets. Really highly recommended. It's a great album.
That guy's got the perfect
Brian name. Henneman's channeling his inner Doug Somm in it. So it's good stuff. Anyway, that's my recommendation. Not much of a stretch, but one worth listening to.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that recommendation, Tony. And thank you, dear listener, for letting us invade your airwaves again with another episode of This is Vinyl Tap, the podcast that always goes to 11. And if you know of anyone who likes the long player format, please let them know about this podcast. We're available on most podcasting platforms. And while you're on one of those podcasting platforms, please leave us a review, give us some stars. We're always looking for some feedback. You can also visit our Facebook group page, which is pretty popular if you're inclined to. And also, if you're old school, you can email us at tappingvinyl@gmail.com. But of course, as always, for the ultimate This is Vinyl Tap experience, please visit our website. Up there, you'll find links to all our past episodes, pictures and videos about the things we've talked about in our episodes, and a few surprises. You can also connect with us there. You can contact us through there as well. www.tappingvinyl.com. Next week is an album by one of the greatest songwriters to come out of Texas, or anywhere for that matter, the great Kris Kristofferson, and his album, Kristofferson.
Feeling nearly faded as my jeans. Bobby thumbed a diesel down.
For our host Doug Cooper, our co-host Tony Slagle, and me, your humble producer, Jonathan J.M. Rowe, asking you the musical question, is anyone going to San Antone?
Bandana and was blowing sad while Bobby sang.